The recorder is on.
Generally do this, or I just ask him.
I'm sorry?
I just ask him. Is it okay?
Hi, Ms. Foster, this is George Wall. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Just before we get started, we just want to make it clear, like Claire said before, now that we are being recorded, it is the policy here at the FCIC to record interviews, so just want to make sure that's okay with both of you before we begin asking any questions.
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, we are both okay with that.
Okay. And just for the record, today is Friday, July 30th. I have 2:34 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time by my watch. Ms. Foster, if you could just give us a brief background, starting with your education through your professional career up until now.
Okay.
As briefly as you can.
Right. I have worked in the financial industry since 1984. I worked for Great Western Bank for 13 years. I worked for First Bank for 8 years.
What's your education level?
Education, I'm just now getting a bachelor's degree. So I went for 3 years out of high school to the University of California, San Diego, San Diego State, but I didn't finish. So I jumped into my career, went full speed ahead, and after I left Countrywide, I got my certified fraud examiner designation, and I went back to school to complete a degree in economic crime investigation.
Where's that at?
At Utica College of Syracuse University in New York.
What was that degree again, ma'am?
Economic crime investigation.
Okay, ma'am.
Further criminal justice studies.
Okay, let's go. You said you started working in the financial industry in 1984. If you could start there and just kind of work up till now, who you worked for and what your positions at those organizations were.
Okay, for the first 14 months at Great Western Bank, I held all of the retail bank positions. So I was a teller, I was a new accounts, I was a supervisor, and I was an assistant branch operations manager. So after 14 months, then I was a regional operations officer, and I had responsibility for multiple branches, conducting audits, investigating losses, that type of thing. Through the 13 years and the different reorganizations and downsizings, I was continually promoted. So I had responsibility for 12 branches, then 24, then 48. And at the end of my career at Great Western, I had a 108 branch network in the greater Los Angeles, Orange County, San Gabriel, Central California area. And I was the area operations manager responsible for risk management, customer service, and bank operations, audits, et cetera. That's when Washington Mutual acquired Great Western Bank. I remained for a while, but then I accepted a position with First Banks, Inc., which was, at the time, it was a holding company with five charters. There were two California charters, one in Texas, and two in the Midwest. And I started with them in charge of their operations and risk management for both California charters. After 3 years, they started to collapse the charters and centralize many of their functions, and they asked me to build out fraud prevention and investigations department, and they also named me corporate security officer. So at that point, I had responsibility for over 100 branches in 4 states, and I did build out their corporate security program as well as their fraud prevention and investigations. And I was there for doing that for 5 years, for the last 5 years I was there. Then they were relocating everything centrally back to St. Louis. I spent a lot of time in St. Louis. I lived in California, but I spent quite a bit of time in St. Louis. They ultimately, there were three managers left in California, and one of them opted to move to St. Louis, and the other two of us chose to just leave the organization at that point, and that's when I started with Countrywide a couple of weeks later.
What year was that?
That was in 2005. So I started with Countrywide in September 2005, and a manager I'd worked with at Great Western hired me in. Countrywide had just experienced some sanctions from regulators over in their complaint, the Office of the President, where they took the executive complaints. They had an issue where an individual in Canada was being faxed customer applications, loan applications for a period of 18 months, and they had difficulty resolving it, and it turned into a privacy, a confidentiality, a huge issue. So the regulators came in and they required that Countrywide put together a program of governance and oversight for that type of thing to ensure that type of thing didn't happen again. I was part of that.
When you say the regulators, could you be more specific?
It was the OTS, I believe, the Office of Thrift Supervision.
The OCC. Sorry to interrupt. It's my understanding that the Countrywide switched its charter, got a thrift charter in 2007, and I think it was
correct
regulated by the Federal Reserve and the OCC before that. There was a separate bank.
Okay, right. So it was the Federal Reserve Board, because the bank, Countrywide Bank, was under the OCC, and Countrywide Home Loans, who I worked for, was FRB.
Okay. And were you in the Calabasas branch, or where specifically did you work when you started working for Countrywide?
When I started working, my office was in Westlake Village.
Okay.
So it was off. It was about 10 minutes north of the Calabasas office. Mm-hmm. My boss's boss was located in Calabasas.
Thank you.
Now, ma'am, when you said the former manager from Greater Western brought you in, did you seek them out or did they seek you out?
I contacted her and said, hey, I'm looking for something, looking for work. And she contacted me a few weeks later.
Okay. And what was explaining about what your duties and responsibilities were going to be at Countrywide at that point?
At that point, what we were doing is there were nine business units. Some of the major divisions, other ones, you know, some joint venture operations that effectively had their own units for managing complaints, whether, you know, just general customer complaints or whether these complaints were coming from, you know, the Department of Insurance or state attorney general offices, a variety of things like that. They were all being independently handled. There was not a centralized or oversight function. So it was basically my boss and I, and we were building that. So it was our job to take those nine business units and understand what they were doing, create some normalized standards, normalized policy procedure, oversight, monitoring, reporting, and put all that together.
And who was your boss?
Her name was Gail Shelley. She reported to Rick Bright, who reported to Drew Gissinger.
All right, ma'am. Now, how long were you involved in building that?
18 months.
And what was the final outcome?
I did a great job. I put together a package. We put together standards and were able to bring all of the 9 divisions under one umbrella and had a system then for monitoring the complaint-based risk. It was probably more informational. There wasn't resources being dedicated to acting on the information, but the information was definitely being gathered at that point. And it was approved by the plan was approved by the regulators.
Now, when you said there was a system for managing complaint-based risks, who are these complaints coming from? Were they internal complaints?
These were the complaints that were directed at executives at the executive level of each of these divisions. So if there was a complaint directed toward Angelo, not necessarily about Angelo, if that was the case too, or if there was a complaint letter sent to one of the members of the board, the director, if there was an inquiry from a state attorney general's office, if there was, you know, an inquiry from, you know, the Department of Insurance, complaint or anything like that. So anything that had regulatory risk, legal risk, things from lawyers would come through those channels. Very little fraud. The fraud was being handled over in the department I would ultimately go and assume responsibility for. But it was legal risk, the regulatory risk, and then, as I said, just the executive. So if it was Dresda Day Sample or Drew Gissinger or Greg Lumsden, the president of, you know, Full Spectrum Lending, the president of the Wholesale Lending Group, or any executive at that level, those complaints would come through. And that's what was handled with this particular group.
So initially you had no involvement in the suspicious activity reports or in that aspect of dealing with the regulators?
No.
Okay. After that 18-month period was over, what was your next position that you held and what were your responsibilities there?
Okay, the next position I held was when I was promoted to executive vice president overseeing their fraud risk management group. And that initially, at the point when I accepted that role, it was at the end of a project where a 30-member steering committee had developed what they called the fraud reengineering plan. And it was an effort to overhaul and reengineer, reorganize the way that fraud was being managed among all of the divisions at Countrywide. It was very similar to what I had just done in the Office of the President, in that you had multiple divisions, multiple business units. They each had their own operations for fraud taking place, but none of it was being overseen at a corporate level. So there were different levels of quality, different levels of oversight, different levels of accountability. And so the goal of this reengineering plan was to put corporate oversight in, some independent oversight. The fraud units within the divisions were being managed by the sales and production personnel.
Were these equally staffed? Was, you know, the group that handled credit cards, it was the same staffing level as that handled mortgage fraud, that handled, you know, I guess, check fraud?
You know, I actually knew very little about what they were doing at Countrywide Bank. They were, when I was in the corporate office of president, I did, that was one of the divisions that came, that looped in. And so really all I had any level of intimate knowledge about was the complaint processes, the customer complaint processes, and what the customers were complaining about over at Countrywide Bank. But I didn't know much about how they were running, you know, their bank offices. They were very small, from what I understood. They had very few transaction accounts. It was mostly a CD shop. They were probably, I just don't know much about them.
Okay. You said the fraud was being managed by sales staff. Can you elaborate on that, specific instances of how they were managed?
Yeah. At Countrywide, we had a consumer market division, and that was basically the prime lending operation. It certainly was the biggest. They had branches everywhere across the nation. And they did all of the prime lending. Then we had another division called Full Spectrum Lending, and that was our subprime operation. They had branches too throughout the U.S., but they operated independently in most respects. There were systems shared and things of that nature, but the sales and production were separate. They would share customers. I mean, that would ultimately become one of the problems my group faced, but that was a separate business unit. They had a wholesale lending division, and that was the brokerage division. So that was the division where we brought in the brokered loans from brokers across the nation. Those, and we had, again, you know, branches throughout. Not as many. There weren't as many wholesale lending branches. And those started being closed down. They were already being closed at the point I came in and took over. But at the point when I did an investigation, there were 38 of them left at that time.
So you said they had separate offices. So if there's a prime lending office in Chicago, there would be a mirroring FSL office too? Or were they run basically out of the same office?
They were not run out of the same office. So I don't know if they located them. I don't know what their marketing plan was or how they worked that, but they were not run out of the same office. When we did our investigations, we were either in a CMD branch or in an FSL branch or in a wholesale lending branch. They were not running operations out of all of them. The Countrywide business model was interesting and different from a lot of the other institutions in that there was, in CMD, there was no centralized underwriting or operations. So what was unique is, it was marketed to the consumer was, you know, you can come in and we can, you know, our loan officer will help you, and we have an underwriter right there and production assistance, and we can take care of your loan in one area. We don't send it off, you know, to some central location where it spends weeks and hours and hours. So it was unique in that respect. Now, Full Spectrum Lending, on the other hand, they did have some centralized underwriting.
Why the difference between the two units or divisions?
I never had a chance to figure that out. I'm not sure. Both made their operation work to their, you know, work to their advantage.
Now, I'm assuming they had separate underwriting standards then, if they had separate underwriting operations.
Yes. Yes, the centralized operations were different. They had different systems. They had different levels of automation, automated approvals, and that type of thing.
Do you know what those standards were or what the approval levels were for the FSL?
As far as, that's a pretty general general question, so I'm not sure what you're looking for.
Okay, we can come back to that. Going back to my earlier question about how sales, how the fraud people were managed by sales, could a salesperson override a fraud investigator on a loan if fraud was uncovered or a loan was labeled, say, fraud suspected? Or could they overrule the underwriter if the underwriter said, no, I don't want to approve this loan?
Yes.
Why was that widely known, or was that just the way business was done? I mean, was that an approved business practice?
Yes. When you say approved business practice,
was it in writing somewhere?
Within its environment. Some environments were less. Were some environments in some branch regional areas, there were some that were more inclined to follow the rules and do what you would expect than others. The very high volume areas tended to be the ones where the rules were bent and broken and twisted regularly, and it was more of an accepted mode of doing business.
So there's nothing in writing anywhere that says a sales associate can override an underwriter as they see fit?
No, I can't.
It's just an accepted, this is the way
it is. That obviously, if anything like that was, printed in paper, auditors and, although the regulation was pretty, there wasn't much oversight from regulators at Countrywide Home Loans until they merged with the bank.
Now, I'm assuming this was widely known at the branch level. To what extent was it known at the corporate level that this was an accepted business practice?
That's probably the $64,000 question. Maybe the better question is, how do you prove that it was known at the executive level? Because you could probably talk to numerous people who would all say to you, yes, it was known at the corporate level. I'll tell you, yes, it was known at the corporate level. But if you ask me to give you evidence, it's all circumstantial, because there isn't going to be a lot in writing or anything like that. But what you hear is what the day-to-day operation was.
Who are some of the people who would say, yes, it was known at the corporate level? Who you would recommend? I mean, part of what we do is just talk to as many people as we can from the company to get a sense of how things actually ran. And so if there are people you'd recommend that we reach out to, who could?
I would say John Kelly would be one person, and I think he'd be great. Number one, he built Countrywide's automated underwriting system, and was responsible for, corporate oversight of it, incorporating changes and improving it to stop. And he was just in a constant knocking heads with sales production. And I think probably my former manager, Mark Miller, would be another one who could, although, he's an executive now with Bank of America, so I think probably John Kelly. John Kelly's still with Bank of America, but he's getting ready to retire.
Okay.
To what extent, were there known battles between sales and underwriting/fraud investigators over the quality of loans that were coming through?
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
The reason that each of the business units, the production divisions, WLD, FSL, and CMD, the reason they each had their own fraud investigations unit or risk management unit, or they had a variety of names for it, was, from what I understand, was because of the corporate investigative team and what they considered to be, you know, interference with their activities. You know, it wasn't fraud prevention, it was loan prevention was kind of the ongoing joke about the fraud investigations group. And so they brought in my predecessor, from what I understand, and I knew him from Great Western Bank. I worked, his name was Eric Stein, I worked with him at Great Western. They brought him in 2002 to build a corporate oversight over all of these divisions, fraud risk management, you know, to manage the losses and to conduct investigations, you know, identify root cause analysis, all of that. He hired quite a few former law enforcement personnel on his team, and from what I understand, it just was very, there was a lot of hostility, there was a lot of just daily battles, being banned from branch, you know, the fraud investigations team banned from a branch. Fraud investigations team would need permission to, you know, enter a location, would have to get permission from sales. Just things that it's really not typical of a well-run organization. In a well-run organization, the people in fraud prevention are collaborating with sales and production because everybody wants, you know, the best for the business, bottom line. It was just very adversarial at best. It was a confrontation, a constant confrontation. So they built up their own units and basically would just go to the top and say, you know what, we've built our own, these people are incompetent, they're hampering our loan production, our sales, they're hurting it, they don't know what they're doing, you know, we've got it taken care of, here's how we're doing it, et cetera. What I believe they were likely doing, although I only had 18 months, it was only, you know, had 18 months to kind of dig around and figure out exactly what was going on, but I believe in a lot of areas they probably sacrificed quite a few loan officers who did something here or there, and they may have been the ones who complained about some of the fraudulent activity. That would be something I would suspect, but never. In the years prior to when I was there, I don't have enough detail there, but I would speculate that. So they built up their own units. The corporate unit run by my predecessor started focusing on more of the loan servicing issues rather than the loan origination issues. So when he had been gone for 6 months at the point when I took over, so there wasn't really anyone running the show for about a 6 month period of time. And that's the state it was in when I got there. And again, here it was kind of what they had tried to do, I guess, 5 years earlier, is get some central oversight.
Now, who were they, you know, you said each had their own fraud unit. Who was responsible for the hiring of these people, and who were they hiring?
Well, for example, I was at the corporate level, but if you considered somebody my counterpart in full spectrum lending, it was an individual, his name was Javier Jaraba. He would be one who could tell you, could really help, I think, with the types of things, the objectives of your committee. However, he has my job now with Bank of America. So he may be hesitant he may be hesitant to say much, but he reported to
John Kelly,
Cliff Katashima, who reported to Greg Lumsden, who was the president of Full Spectrum Lending. So when I would try to collaborate with Javier on an investigation, Javier was limited in his decision making, his decisions on how to run an investigation, who would be interviewed, what if there would be an on-site investigation, if we'd actually look at any physical documents, anything like that, would have to be approved by Greg Lund. And Greg was the son-in-law of the co-founder of Angelo's co-founder of Dave Loeb.
Ma'am, do you think, or do you know if the people that were hired in each unit were had sufficient backgrounds or sufficient training to undertake the? I mean, there was a lot of loans, and there's a a lot of businesses went through Countrywide Home Loans and Countrywide Bank. Do you think that these units were adequately staffed? And the people were adequately trained? Or do you know?
No, I don't believe they were. I know when I went into, when I took accepted the role with my group, there were 32 investigators, and I would say that three of them, at best, had the knowledge to do what they were doing.
That was
they were clerks. They were clerks from... the customer service unit from the servicing area. So some had worked in, title and just done clerical data entry work. By far, the highest number of people in my group were data entry clerks before they were assigned fraud investigations.
And you said those 32 were just in your group when you got there. That's not across each.
No, that was my group. But it had been, as I said, it had been refocused into kind of looking at loan servicing. The vast majority of them were working identity theft cases. There were three investigators who would work probably loan origination fraud and internal fraud. And again, they had no background. None of them had any lending background. Not a one.
You said three were actually qualified. In what way were they more qualified than the others?
I don't know if they were qualified. They were more qualified than the others in that one of them, who would be one of my direct reports, had the same background that I did, retail banking operations, and had been in fraud risk management for probably at least 20 years. So as far as running fraud investigations, that person was qualified. They'd never been a lender, and sometimes you really need to, you need to have done it to understand the full extent, especially for internal investigations, I believe. Now, there was another individual, Greg Conyers, who had worked as a fraud investigator at Washington Mutual, but in check forgeries. So again, not in lending operations. He didn't have any lending background, but he did have 3 years of fraud investigations experience. There was another individual. There's four people. So there was Warren Bauer, was a fraud investigator. He was probably the most qualified. He had his own brokerage business for a while with his brother, and he had been a police officer and detective. So he was qualified. I promoted him quickly. And we had one other ex-law enforcement person, Michelle Struckman. She had been at Countrywide. She had been there for 3 years, and although she had no lending background previously, she conducted the vast majority of the internal investigations there for the 3 years before I was there, and so she had a fair amount of knowledge and a very good understanding of what was going on.
Ma'am, can you talk about the SAR process, the suspicious activity reports that get sent to FinCEN? Can you talk about the process that, say once a loan was flagged as possibly being fraudulent, what the steps were to get that SAR filed at Countrywide?
Okay, well, I can speak for Countrywide Home Loans, and not as much Countrywide Bank.
Okay.
Although I did have responsibility for reporting their numbers to the board, but not over the quality or how they were prepared. When I assumed my role, the suspicious activity reports at Countrywide were, I'm trying to think of how to explain this. Each of those 30-odd investigators that I told you about, the average caseload at Countrywide when I took over there was anywhere from 50 to 150 cases was an average caseload.
Per investigator?
Per investigator. Because at the time, at that time, we were voluntary filers, but our policy was that we filed suspicious activity reports, and we wouldn't do it any differently than if we were not voluntary filers.
So
we weren't required.
So you were not subject to FinCEN rules, but you filed SARs as though you were?
Yes. Yes. So we chose to be a voluntary filer.
Okay.
Okay. And that was up until January of 2008 when we merged with the bank. We became a depository institution, and then we were required. So when I got there, they were trying to meet their deadline. It's a requirement that you file a SAR within 30 days of becoming aware of suspicious activity. And the manner in which notifications, potential fraud notifications, and potential suspicious activity notifications flowed into the risk management group, it was, in a nutshell, it was just overwhelming. So the way that the process was just to fill out the information. They filled out the bare minimum of information that they had when the allegation came in, what the allegation was, and they filed it with FinCEN. So they met the requirement. It would not have been investigated, would not have been vetted. Probably a vast majority of it may not have been fraud. There was a lot of clerical and customer service issues. I mean, that was a big part of my initial 90 days there, was to weed through a lot of that. Then, and these were just the incidents that were coming through my group. So anything that was going into full spectrum lending, into their fraud unit, into consumer market division, their fraud unit, into wholesale lending division, their fraud unit, into the correspondent lending groups, their fraud unit, there were no SARs being filed. There was nothing being reported.
When you say
nothing in Balboa Insurance, nothing in any of these other divisions had a process for reporting suspicious activity.
What do you mean they didn't have a process? I mean,
there was no requirement.
So because there was no requirement, they refused to file?
Well, it wasn't. I don't know if it was a refusal. It's hard to say. If I had had a chance to talk to my predecessor, that may have provided a little bit more enlightenment as to, you know, how everything happened there. I mean, I went in under the mindset of, okay, I really understand now why they hired me, why they've put together this fraud reengineering plan, and why we have to change the way we're doing business, because the way we're doing business is not acceptable. You know, this will generate, if it hasn't already, it will generate a lot of problems. So I recognize that just based on my years of experience. in managing fraud and managing risk.
Who actually filed the SAR? Was it the fraud investigator or was it the underwriter?
The only SARs were filed by fraud investigators. So that was a policy, is that the fraud group, my group, so fraud risk management, were the only ones that could file SARs.
Now,
but we could only file SARs for the things that we knew about. So there just was no requirement to escalate, to notify the central fraud group of fraud incidents. So all of the fraud that may have been taking place and being managed out by the sales units was being, you know, I like to use the word concealed, but it was being self-contained in those units.
Was there a central repository for SARs that were filed at Countrywide?
That was me. That was my group.
Okay, so you were...
So I would receive the... I'd receive volumes from Countrywide Bank. I'd receive numbers. I'd receive this summary file. And then there were the SARs that my group filed. And if we did receive a notification from any of these other groups where they came in and did ask for our assistance in resolving a fraud issue, then a SAR would be filed. But for all of the incidents that were being managed in the business unit, there was no, they were not required to notify my group or submit the incident for filing until, you know, I started to make changes. And some groups eventually complied with that. Most groups did. Full Spectrum Lending never did.
Ma'am, you said, I believe in your OSHA complaint, that you know you believe that SARs were grossly underfiled at Bank of America, or at, excuse me, at Countrywide.
Yeah.
Was that based on the fact that you weren't getting any filings from the other divisions?
Yes. And they pretty much refused to provide them, allow me to review them, do any kind of an examination to understand what they were, if they needed reporting, if they needed filing. I was not permitted access. I was not permitted access at all in Full Spectrum Lending or Correspondent Lending. I had some access in the Consumer Market Division and in the Wholesale Lending Division. I had limited access there.
Did your managers know about this?
Yes.
Did the regulators?
I don't know. I mean, I did have interaction with the regulators when I was in the fraud risk management group. I spoke with a regulator one time in January, February 2008, right after I was, you know, at that point, I felt like we were making a turn. We had just had an internal audit, and I thought we were going to expose the FSL issues, and then that audit was edited down. So, but that's the only time I had a 30-minute conversation with a regulator who was asking about internal controls at Countrywide. Mm-hmm.
When you say it was edited down, could you just elaborate on that a little bit?
The audit report, what I had asked, they called it an enterprise fraud audit, and they began that examination in November of 2007, which was just a couple of months after I started getting a broader understanding of what was going on, how things were operating at Countrywide. What I already understood very well is that I suspected there was quite a bit of fraud taking place in Full Spectrum Lending in the subprime group, but I had no access to it. I had no way, I had no way to get to it, and I was getting 2 referrals a month. So they would send me 2 fraud incidents on average each month, and I would file a SAR on those. But I suspected that the number of fraud incidents were probably in the hundreds, but I was getting 2. So I communicated this to the internal audit manager, was Brian Coleman at the time. He was in charge of that audit. And I said, you know, here's my numbers. Here's what gets referred to me. You guys have access to Full Spectrum Lending. Look at what they're referring to me and compare to the number of incidents that they may be logging in their fraud control unit. And he confirmed to me as much, but then the final audit report, when it was issued in March of 2008, said nothing. It said, basically said, Full Spectrum Lending should submit an action plan to Mark Miller, who was my boss, to Mark Miller to ensure that fraud incidents, you know, are reported in accordance with policy. It's something, and that was it.
Just a few follow-up questions. Was the enterprise fraud audit initiated as because of the takeover by Countrywide or the purchase by of Bank of America by purchase?
We weren't aware of it at that point. Or I wasn't aware of it. I, you know, Bank of America was announced on January 12th. This was initiated in November. I'm not certain why. I don't know what, you know, where that came from.
Ma'am, why were employee relations doing the fraud investigations at Countrywide?
Do you want my personal opinion?
I would like your opinion, as if you have any facts to substantiate that, that'd be appreciated as well.
And I wasn't there long enough to get enough evidence to I think I have enough to substantiate. If I could get back into my case files, I certainly could. But I believe that employee relations was involved so that they could selectively control, you know, what was exposed, what business would continue, what people would continue in the business, and what people weren't. So when there was a large, you know, producer, probably the Boston investigation that I did in FSL that started in July 2007, you know, just 4 months after I took the position, is probably the best example, in that particular region and the regional manager and the division manager had both, there had been, I came to find out, just numerous allegations of fraud continually. They were directed to report it to employee relations rather than to my group. I'm trying to think of, it's such a huge, it was a huge investigation. The regional manager, the division manager, they were the highest producers in Full Spectrum Lending. The group that they had amassed among them were also among the highest producing loan officers. The manner in which they conducted their business, and we went in there in 6 branches and we terminated 44 people. Now, I got involved in that investigation because, unlike all of the anything that may have preceded this Boston investigation, an employee who had been terminated for reporting fraud, for complaining about the fraud, called my group instead of employee relations. And so I was they tried to, they being Greg Lumsden and Cliff Katashima, did their best to try to control what I elected to do in the investigation, how I wanted to conduct the investigation, but they were also, they were proceeding carefully because they knew, I think they knew they couldn't push it too far because I wasn't in that reporting chain. I was in a different reporting chain. But we ended up terminating 44 people. And of, I think one of the best examples of what was going on there was the regional manager, shortly after we started the investigation, sent an email out to the entire region, so to 8 branches and everybody who was in those 8 branches, that said, be careful what you put in your email because the corporate group will use it against you in their fraud investigation.
And the employee relations sent that?
No, the regional manager for Full Spectrum Lending, who had oversight of 8 branches. So he was in charge of the 8 branches I was investigating. I only got through 6 of them. And I think we only had 9 people left out of those 6 branches that we did not terminate. But he was one of them. That we weren't permitted to terminate him, and we weren't permitted to terminate the division manager, although we made those recommendations.
Why weren't you allowed to terminate them?
I couldn't answer that. There was no reasonable explanation provided.
Okay, in your opinion, why do you think you weren't allowed to terminate them?
Because they were going to ramp up the same operation all over again. They needed the structure, the infrastructure. They needed the division manager, and they needed the regional manager to breed the loan officers and the branch managers in the manner that was going to produce the highest volume of loans, where they could, you know, bend the rules and do what they needed to do. I mean, in that investigation was where we uncovered the use of the automated valuation system. So the property value system, what they were doing is they were focused on home equity loans. So the borrower needed to have enough equity in their home so they could get them this cash out loan. So the number one thing is they had to establish a value that allowed them to give out enough cash. If the home didn't qualify for the value, what they would do is they would enter in a property address that had the value that they desired. The machine would bring it up, they'd print it out, then they'd cut and paste, they'd cut out the real address, paste it on top of the fake address, and then photocopy it, and that would go in with the underwriting package. So that substantiated what the value that they needed to do that loan. Some of the customers had so little cash that the loan officers would give them the $50 required to off their own credit cards, give them $50 to what was the document that some document they needed. They had to pay a $50 fee for, and they would front that. Our clues, our other automated underwriting system, they would manipulate income, assets, until that came up with an approval. We found in the desk drawers just blank templates for Bank of America bank statements, Wells Fargo bank statements, just a variety of financial institutions. They were just blank templates, and they were emailing them back and forth, the loan officers, between the branches. You need a B of A statement? Here's one. You need this statement? Here's one. So they would manufacture that. If a customer brought in pay stubs and income tax forms, if it didn't meet the income requirement, they would just move them to a, they'd move them into a no income, no assets, the stated income product, and they would just throw those into the recycle bin. So part of our investigation, part of what I did there is before they knew that I was going to do anything, I had their recycle bins pulled. When they thought it was the company coming to take them and destroy them, I had them taken to a different site, and then I sent investigators out to go through them. And so we were able to pull out the documents the customers had brought in and then compare them to what was in the stated income product on the loan.
Eileen, I'm just going to jump in here. We've just about reached the amount of time that I've budgeted for this conference call today. So if you guys have, you know, maybe a couple quick follow-ups, you know, we could do that, or, you know, maybe set another time to talk a little bit more. And I would like to talk to Eileen about this area of questioning right now, because it is an interesting area, and I wonder, you know, where the line of authority and everything would apply to that. It's something that we haven't really considered to this point.
Sure. We're at a breaking point. Sure. We could break for the day.
And you know, we'll look over our notes, and if there are follow up questions, you know, we will get in touch with you, Matt.
Okay, that sounds really good. We really, you know, appreciate the time you guys put into this, and we are available, you know, on fairly short notice if you guys have follow up or need anything.
Great, thank you both very much for making the time.
Okay, thanks a lot.
It's now 3:44 p.m.
Take care.
I agree. Okay,
thanks.
Thank you.